KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Navajo Nation citizen has been nominated by President Donald Trump to serve as Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs. The nomination of William Kirkland was sent to the U.S. Senate on Monday, according to the Congressional Database. The Navajo Times reports Kirkland is a political strategist from Georgia who's worked in the state's political landscape. He also served in various positions during the first Trump administration. Kirkland is said to have played a role working with tribes on the issue of missing and murdered indigenous women, helping with the Trump administration's response through Operation Lady Justice. He was honored during a reception at the Navajo Nation Washington office in January, the night before President Trump took office. Kirkland gave brief remarks at the reception. In an audio recording provided by Indians.com, Kirkland said, "Anytime we can get Indian country more involved, whether it's here in Washington or in the states, or the inaugural events," he said, "we definitely want to do so." He added, "The White House will continue to have an open-door policy with all tribal nations." If confirmed, Kirkland will replace Brian Newland, who resigned at the end of the Biden administration. Just a day after the Acluna Tribe's casino opened to the public near Anchorage, the state of Alaska filed a lawsuit against the federal government that, if successful, could shut it down. The lawsuit claims federal agencies misused their legal authority to allow the gaming operation to go forward. The native village of Acluna opened a small gaming hall to the public on Monday with 85 electronic bingo machines, following years of legal debate over whether it could do so on a native allotment. The state has argued that tribes do not have jurisdiction over its lands in Alaska, but last year the U.S. Interior Department gave the tribe the green light to pursue the gaming hall. Just a few days before Trump was sworn into office, then Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs Brian Newland gave the tribe final approval for the project. The Chinon Gaming Hall opened in just 4.5 days, made up of trailers that were quickly moved onto the lot. The lawsuit has not affected the gaming hall's operations yet. The tribe's president, Aaron Leggett, says Governor Mike Dunleavy and his Attorney General, Craig Taylor, have asked for a court order that could cause enormous damage to the tribe and the community. In a statement, Leggett said, "I am disappointed for my people and my ancestors who have worked diligently for generations to get to this moment." He says the tribe will stand up to the legal challenge because it knows its case is strong. Yellowstone bison from the United States make it to Canada. Wyoming Public Radio's Olivia Wheats has the details.
In recent years, Yellowstone bison have been rehomed to tribes across the U.S. Last week, for the first time, the Bison Conservation Transfer Program sent them to Canada. Shami Anderson, with the nonprofit Defenders of Wildlife, helped with the transportation logistics. She says 11 bison traveled on a 700-mile route from the Fort Peck tribes in northeastern Montana to a tribal nation in Saskatchewan.
Lots of singing, and the whole community was, you know, yelling and happy and just absolute jubilation. It was really, really remarkable.
Chief Tanya Stone of Mosquito, Grizzly Bear's Head, Lean Man First Nations said in a press release, quote, "These buffalo are coming to us as a family group led by a matriarch. This beautiful gift is deeply meaningful as we collectively rebuild our relationship to them as they teach us perseverance, strength, and determination," end quote. I'm Olivia Wheats at the Center of the West in Cody.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at AARP.org. See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
Total lost wages to the state of Alaska, $88,898,788.
How federal workforce cuts could impact Alaska's economy and public services. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, February 5th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, advocates respond to an increase in immigration and customs enforcement in Anchorage.
We want all Alaskans to know that they have rights. Even non-citizen Alaskans have rights.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Rural Alaska residents interested in preserving subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing for future generations may consider applying to serve on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council, which provides an open forum for public opinions and concerns regarding subsistence. Apply by Sunday, February 16th. More information at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@ios.doi.gov. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
The Trump administration is pressing to reduce the federal workforce. In Alaska, which has about 15,000 federal employees, the effects of a workforce reduction could be substantial on government services and on the economy. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
David Travers, the chief steward for AFGE Local 3028, representing workers at the Department of Veterans Affairs in Alaska. He says no one went to work there to get rich.
We've all gone there and dedicated our lives to serving our veterans because we wanted to give back. And right now, what's happening is chilling.
The Trump administration late last month offered millions of workers 7 months' pay in return for voluntary resignations. AFGE is warning its members the pay part might not be enforceable. Separately, some federal workers have received emails warning they could be fired immediately. The administration has also collected names of new employees still on their probationary period. Traver told a State House committee that Alaska has 1,200 federal employees who have been in their jobs less than a year, and medical staff at the VA are on probation for 2 years.
If those employees are let go, total lost wages to the state of Alaska, $88,898,788.
If the lower-level VA employees are fired, Traver says the medical providers will be under more pressure and have less time to see patients. He says uncertainty is demoralizing the workforce.
I can tell you my phone has not stopped ringing with staff that are scared. We have staff prepping their resumes, looking for work elsewhere, nurses, providers.
The implications of federal job cuts would reverberate in Alaska. Economists say Alaska is heavily dependent on federal spending. Just the part of that paid in wages to Alaska's federal employees adds up to $1.4 billion a year.
You know, the federal government is our number one industry.
Neil Freed is a retired state labor economist.
We should be watching this really closely. I mean, it's kind of like, I suspect, the way people in Detroit watch what's happening in the auto industry.
University of Alaska Anchorage economics professor Kevin Berry says federal jobs pay well, about 28% more than the average Alaska wage.
federal government jobs are unique in that they are one of the industries, in addition to like oil and resource development, that brings money into the state of Alaska instead of just shuffling it around within the state.
Federal jobs, Barry says, also support private sector jobs. That's through the recirculation of money as federal workers spend their pay, and also through the services federal employees provide that help advance, for instance, the oil industry.
Resource development in general requires people to answer the phone and help move permitting processes forward and get things done. So federal funding is not only large in the amount of money that it directly brings into the state, but the amount of activity that it enables.
It's not clear how many federal jobs in Alaska the Trump administration might cut or if legal challenges might eventually restore them. Traver, the union steward, says even VA managers have been turning to him for information because they can't get answers from the administration. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A system designed in the 1970s was supposed to make Alaska's commercial fishing industry more sustainable and more profitable. But over the last 50 years, it has hollowed out many indigenous coastal villages where residents no longer can earn a living by harvesting salmon. Northern Journal reporter Nat Herz interviewed residents across the Gulf of Alaska to learn how commercial fishing has changed. He says it all stems from a policy called limited entry.
1971, you wanted to be a commercial salmon fisherman in Alaska. Nothing stopping you. Go buy a boat on the open market, buy a net, go out. Slay some salmon if you, you know, have the skills. And the problem was at the time, in the decades leading up to this kind of monumental decision by the Alaska public, actually, which had to approve a constitutional amendment to make this legal. And then the legislature sort of implemented it. In the kind of 20 years leading up to that time, there was a huge kind of influx of fishermen into Alaska waters for various reasons. But it just meant that these fisheries were getting like increasingly crowded. Some people say there was more pressure on the fish than was sort of ideal. There's some debate about how much this policy really improves conservation. But yeah, basically, it was a free-for-all. And the policymakers and the public decided we need to cap the number of people that are getting into the industry so that people can make a living.
So you note that initially a lot of Alaska Native fishermen got priority access to these fishing permits. But fast forward to today, and a lot of the permits have left the hands of rural villages. What happened there?
So these permits were initially granted based on your track record as a commercial fisherman, and specifically how much, quote unquote, economic hardship you would suffer if you did not get one of these permits that allowed you to fish. That actually put a pretty big emphasis on like rural, largely indigenous communities around the Gulf of Alaska, because commercial fishing was a really substantial part of those communities' economies. Not to say that it went smoothly and everyone who should have got a permit or deserved a permit or wanted a permit got a permit, but I think half of the initial permits went to Alaska Native people, even though at the time Native people were like 18% of the population. However, there was this very controversial provision that policymakers created when they set up the system. It's called free transferability, which basically means you can sell your permit at any time to anyone for any price. And based on some pretty basic like economic dynamics, the permits very quickly started being sold from these like rural, largely Native communities in coastal Alaska to people who lived in more urban areas, had more money, bigger boats, basically because the permits, like if you are more capitalized, have more access to money and wealth, you can upgrade your boat, buy a faster boat, buy a bigger engine, buy a bigger net. That means you can catch more fish, and that means that your expected future earnings from a permit are probably going to be higher than someone who is living in a rural area, doesn't necessarily have access to like a bank or could take out loans to make investments or upgrades to their boat. So this kind of trend happened. It played out all across the Gulf of Alaska on different kinds of salmon permits, but particularly with the most valuable ones.
And what's the price tag for a permit like that?
They go up and down. They went really high in the early years of this new system, which I think, helped fuel the pressure
from the markets to kind of buy them up. Just 3 years ago, the Bristol Bay kind of premier, most lucrative, most valuable permit, the set gill net permit that you use a boat to sort of catch as many salmon as you want, like those were going for $250,000. I think the Southeast Seine permits, Southeast Purse Seine permits, which is another one that was focused on in the story, those, you know, can sell for like $200,000 or $300,000. The value of the Kodiak Seine permits has, I think, gone a little lower, more like 40 or 50, but like, you know, huge investments. And you talk to any commercial fisherman today and they'll tell you, like, to get into the industry, you have to take on an enormous amount of debt. Like, even if you get a permit, you still have to buy a boat, you still have to have a net. And I think, you know, you talk to policymakers and people who are trying to fix this problem, they say, like, we're not going to solve everything if we can create a way for people to access permits and access fishing without having to spend specifically the money on a permit, because you'd still need a boat, you still need a processor. But certainly this is one thing that the state has like very clear authority to control and make decisions about and make easier. And it's something we haven't really chosen to fix.
So where does that leave commercial fishermen who operate out of rural Alaska today?
I mean, you still have some. You still have a lot. You still have some really kind of successful highliner folks, aging folks, young folks. But I think, you know, if you look at what's happened, the overall trends with access to commercial fishing and permit ownership over the past 50 years, you've seen many of the permits be consolidated like on the road system outside of Alaska, in rural hub communities like Kodiak, like Homer. And if you're a young person in a rural village on Kodiak Island in Southeast Alaska, like, it's not something that people really are able to kind of aspire to do in a way that is like really accessible or where they can see a clear future for themselves in the industry. And I think that is, a lot of people see that as like a shame and a travesty, because, you know, these are communities that have been tied to commercial or harvest for trade for since time immemorial. And this is no longer something that they have access to.
That was Northern Journal reporter Nat Herz. His story was produced with support from the Pulitzer Center and in partnership with APM Reports and Alaska Public Media. You can read his full story, The Last Skipper in Yuzinki, on our website, alaskapublic.org. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Sitka High School club invites students of all nationalities to learn more about Filipino culture.
Like, I've never been a part of a like heritage type of club, so being here and learning about this different stuff has been really interesting.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
How does Alaska's land fund community services for Alaskans with behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities? Through the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The Trust Land Office manages 1 million acres of lands to maximize revenue generation, with earnings supporting millions of dollars in trust grant making each year to help improve mental health outcomes for beneficiaries statewide. More at alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
FBI agents in Anchorage helped in a nationwide immigration crackdown under President Trump last weekend. But local groups, including the Anchorage School District, are pushing back. The local FBI office publicized the operation on social media on Monday, posting three photos of federal officers flanking men in handcuffs. Spokespeople for the FBI and U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement said they had no additional information to release on the operation, including how many arrests or deportations were involved. Bobby Lafferty, the head of ASD's English Language Learning Program, says no federal officers have entered Anchorage schools or detained students. She says the district will follow the law, but it will require officers to have a warrant and follow its procedures.
Those processes include verifying identification, taking down information about the person's badge number, contacting their supervisor to verify the legitimacy of the visit, and then taking information about any warrant or subpoena that they might have.
Although ASD sent a statement to parents featuring a website on immigration just after the FBI's Monday post, Lafferty says much of the information was gathered months ago. She says families have called school staff asking questions.
Some of the immigration resources that we began crafting, we began in the fall in anticipation of families' uncertainty and potential fear, and we will always want to prioritize families feeling safe and comfortable with their children going to school.
Megan Barker at the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska says the group is focused on informing people how they can respond if asked about their immigration status.
We want all Alaskans to know that they have rights. Even non-citizen Alaskans have rights. And so we want to make sure that people are equipped to advocate for their rights when they are approached by a law enforcement officer, and to do so in a way that defends their rights and also is appropriate for what the officer is asking.
Barker praises ASD's response, noting its focus on requiring that officers have a warrant. Meanwhile, the Fairbanks Area School District will have three fewer neighborhood elementary schools come this summer. After a year-long delay and several community meetings, the Board of Education voted Tuesday night on a consolidation plan. KUAC's Robin reports.
Superintendent Luke Minert identified five elementary schools in January. Closing all five would have saved the district $17 million and cut into a projected $16 million deficit. But the Fairbanks North Star Borough Board of Education voted 5-2 to consolidate Midnight Sun, Pearl Creek, and Two Rivers Elementaries. The board took Hunter and Salcha Elementary Schools off the original list of five. Danette Peterson, president of the Fairbanks Education Association, says there's a natural grieving process underway as a result of the board's agonizing decision.
It is not a burden that those directly impacted should bear alone. It is going to take our entire community to help heal and build new school communities. I invite all to be a part of that healing process and to work toward unity.
During the debate, board members often teared up. One or another board member moved to remove each school, one at a time, from the list. Eventually, the two were pulled. Hunter's attendance area families are 67% economically disadvantaged. That's the highest percentage in the district. Board member Morgan Doolian said that was among her reasons to keep the school open and accessible.
Hunter Elementary has the most stable enrollment for our district with only a 5% variation over 20 years. Hunter Elementary is a growing neighborhood with a concentration of affordable housing. Hunter serves our largest population of Alaska Native students. Hunter Elementary has a significant growth in reading, exceeding district targets by 11%, with a 16% increase in literacy just last year.
About half the board agreed and passed the motion 4-3 to keep the school open. After the motion to remove Hunter, member Brandy Hardy suggested pulling Pearl Creek School off the list because of an active community base and a pending plan to change it to a magnet school.
I strongly believe Pearl Creek has the ability to draw students back to this district. I believe that we run the risk of alienating a very active, very vocal, and well-connected community and base of people who will be who we need to help us get out of this death spiral.
But that failed, as did moves to take two others off the list. One of the district's smallest schools in Salcha, with 60 students, was to be closed, but the board voted to keep it open with reduced funding. This is the third time in 4 years that the Fairbanks North Starborough School District has closed schools amid budget deficits and declining enrollment. In 2022, the board shut down Nordale and Joy Elementary Schools, and last year, Ben Eielson Junior Senior High School was shuttered. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Dozens of parents, students, and staff gave emotional testimony at the Anchorage School Board meeting on Tuesday night after the district released a draft budget last week that makes significant cuts to programs and activities. The budget would eliminate four positions from the Alaska School for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. Several parents, staff, and a student described the cuts as dire. They spoke to the board through interpreters, asking for American Sign Language fluent staff to remain at the school. Pepper Draper is an 11-year-old sixth grader at the school. She said she never interacted with adults using sign language before she enrolled in the school 2 years ago.
I'm able to be a part of deaf culture and work on my deaf identity. And I very much cherish my school and the program and working with my counselors. And please keep our staff and counselors.
Facing a deficit of $111 million, the draft budget would cut all middle school sports, three high school sports, and the Ignite program for gifted students, as well as increasing the pupil-to-teacher ratio by 4 for every grade level. Jennifer Phillips has worked for the district for over two decades and asked the board not to cut the Ignite program for gifted elementary and middle school students. Phillips says gifted students can lose interest in a class if they're not being challenged by the curriculum.
In the Ignite classroom, students are given multiple chances and challenges in which they may fail or hit the wall. And with the guidance of their teacher, they can learn strategies to move through these complex problems.
The budget calls for a draw of nearly $50 million from the district's savings account and assumes no increase in the base student allocation, the state's per-student funding formula. However, lawmakers have said they're prioritizing a measure to stabilize education funding this session. Negotiations between members of the House, Senate, and governor's office began Tuesday.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education. Alaska Pacific University offers a variety of personalized and relevant hands-on degree programs with close mentorship from exceptional faculty. At APU, students are the core of a tight-knit and supportive community invested in their academic success. Education is collaborative, innovative, and transformational, encouraging student development and honoring Indigenous heritage. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
The Sitka High School Barkadas Club is providing a space for students and community members to celebrate Filipino heritage in Sitka. KCAW's Meredith Reddick stopped by the school for the group's weekly meeting to learn more.
On a rainy Wednesday around lunchtime, the students in room 211 at Sitka High are passing around styrofoam takeout containers of egg rolls. They're here for the weekly meeting of the Barkadas Club. The word Barkadas translates to group of friends in Tagalog. Senior Julian Nabwa started the club in 2023 after attending a camp for young Filipino Americans in Washington State.
My friends all talked about a Filipino club and it sounded really interesting, so I wanted to start one here too.
She says she wanted to create a space where Filipino Americans could take pride in their culture and, for some, learn more about their own heritage.
Usually we don't really learn much about it in school or at home because, you know, we're in the U.S., but...
A little over 6% of Sitkins identify as Filipino or Filipino-American, according to the most recent data. Julia's mother, Benny Grace Nabwa, is an advisor for the Barkadas Club. In 2022, she helped develop a scholarship for Filipino students in Sitka and helped draft a municipal resolution declaring October to be Filipino American History Month. She says she was eager to support Julia's idea to start the Barkadas.
Julia, you know, finding herself and having a better and deeper appreciation of her identity as a Filipino teenager here in the U.S., you know, kind of like, oh, I think it would be super great, you know, to have that space.
Now, the Barkadas have extended their reach far beyond the walls of Room 211. The club has coordinated two salo-salos, or community gatherings, to celebrate Filipino-American History Month. Last year's event brought in more than 100 people. Benny Grace says the students did most of the work to organize those events.
So the salo-salo gatherings that we have been having for the past 2 years are our big projects and the fundraisers, connecting with businesses, asking for solicitations. Most of them are done by the students with, how should I say it? They have really been independent about doing a lot of the work.
Sitka High teacher Jared Rivera is a faculty advisor for the Barkadas and a Filipino American. He says growing up, he remembers Sitka's Filipino American community hosting many events.
I remember when I was young, we had huge potlucks. I mean, the whole community was invited, and it was a big thing. It was huge. And then, you know, that went away. But now, since the Barkadas Club started this, you know, we're getting a lot of buy-in from the community and stuff.
The club has attracted a diverse group of students, including many who aren't Filipino-American. Senior Desiree Hutton says she initially joined to support Julia, her friend since sixth grade.
When she told me she was starting this group, She was like, can you come for this first meeting? I'm nervous. And I was like, I got you. I'll be there.
Hutton has been a member since that first meeting, and she's now the club treasurer.
Like, I've never been a part of a, like, heritage type of club, so being here and learning about this different stuff has been really interesting. And it's also been cool being able to, though I'm not Filipino, being able to still be involved how I am. That's just fun and cool getting to learn something new.
Julia says she hopes the club continues to grow, even in her absence. She's already mentoring younger students to take over club leadership after she, Hutton, and Vice President Rex Adres graduate this spring. And she says even after graduation, she hopes to serve as a resource for future members. In Sitka, I'm Meredith Reddick.
A program that has supported thousands of Alaska students from across the state celebrated its 30th anniversary last Friday. For the Alaska Desk, Aliona Naidzin has more.
Alaska Native Science and Engineering program, known as ANSEP, began 30 years ago to help one Indigenous student get a scholarship. Since then, ANSEP has helped more than 2,500 Alaskans from all over the state get their footing in science, engineering, and business. Hundreds of people turned out at the Dena'ina Civic and Convention Center to celebrate the program and its success stories. Matt Calhoun is the executive director of ANSEP. He's also the world's first Alaska native to earn a PhD in civil engineering, according to the University of Alaska Anchorage. Calhoun is Athabascan from South Central, but has roots in the Upper Kuskokwim River region.
So when I started with ANSEP, it was in 1999, and there was 20 university students. And now there's thousands from kindergarten to PhD.
One of the main features of the program is that it allows middle and high school students to take college classes. The shortcut helps families save money. ANSEP proponents say it can also be more cost-effective for schools and governments. Isabella January, a high school senior in Bethel, is one of the ANSEP students.
I was originally really into science and engineering, and I just wanted to dip my toes into it.
She ended up diving in completely. She earned 125 college credits before finishing high school. That's more than enough for an Associate of Science degree. January plans to attend the School of Medicine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City in the fall. In the future, she says she hopes to specialize in removing tumors or treating aneurysms and strokes.
I plan to specialize in either neurosurgery or emergency medicine, and I will be receiving my MD within the next 4 years. And it is all thanks to ANSEP for allowing me to get a jump start in my career.
Herb Schroeder founded the program. He says that the idea behind ANSEP was to grow the number of Alaska Native professionals in the fields like fish and wildlife management, healthcare, and education. Schroeder says that early on, some educators did not believe Indigenous students were able to succeed academically or professionally.
For the students, thank you for inspiring us every single day by doing what was once considered impossible. It's the honor of my life to have helped kick down the walls of ignorance that denied opportunity to so many for so long.
ANSEP started as an opportunity for Alaska Native students, but has expanded to include applicants of all ethnicities. It has been growing the number of students it helps get degrees and internships. In Anchorage, I am Aliona Naidin.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Chris Clint and Aliona Naidzin in Anchorage, Robin in Fairbanks, and Meredith Reddick in Sitka. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning. With reporters covering every corner of Alaska, you can be sure you're up to date on the stories that matter to Alaskans. Join me, Ava White, for Alaska Morning News, weekdays on your local public radio station.
If you love what you hear on your public radio station, consider becoming a member. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
If I could tell the world just one thing, it would be that we're all okay. And not to worry, 'cause worry is wasteful and useless in times like these. I won't be made useless, won't be idle with despair. I'll gather myself around my faith, the light the darkness most fears. Steal your laughter, and heartache came to visit me, but I knew it wasn't ever after. We'll fight, not out of spite, but someone must stand up for what's right.
Where does my heart go? Where does my heart go?
It's easy when you away. One note from the song she wrote could put me where I lay. Just one note can make me choke. One note, that's not a lie. Just one note could cut my throat. One note could make me die. I like her to spike with pain, and music is my aeroplane. It's my aeroplane. Summer sweet and sour Jane, and music is my aeroplane. It's my aeroplane. Let's spike with pain.
Open door and oh, Virginia. All my friends are there to greet. Say I'm feeling scared. Boy, you've got to let it go. I tell her what we've got is so right. Can it last out there? In this world, you never know. Oh, oh, then I close my eyes and I wait, imagining what she might say. Your goodbye, and then she says she believes in dreaming, and then she says she talks to the stars, and then she says she can see forever from where we are.
I see myself in her eyes, and my mind plays games. What if this all comes apart? Everyone around me turning, promises the pain. History loves a broken heart.
you can see forever where we are. And think of all the lonely people. I'm thinking about, well, they're the ones that live without. Then I see a smile on her face, and I wonder how.
Gone, I've been walking all around town. When you were here, I was flying. You couldn't get me down. You hit me by surprise. Stepped into the morning, I could only see the moon. I could only tell your memory by its stain. And I was sure I'd see you, and all I need's a chance for me to say, yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe you need time on your own, but you take part of me when you go. You're the place my heart has on hold when you go. Mind you, you have something that's mine, and I'm coming to speak my mind. I stepped into the